From NPR Music, this is a special DJ edition of All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Most weeks I get to pick the music for the show, but I love having other guests come on, and particularly other musicians come on the show and choose the music. When I heard the new CD by Anushka Shankar, I wondered, what does one of the best sitar players in the world listen to? Especially someone that these days makes music far outside the Indian classical tradition. Well, today, Anushka Shankar is at NPR member station, WNYC in New York City, and I'm going to play some songs from Breathing Underwater, the new CD she did in a collaboration with Kersh Kalle. He also acts as the producer. She's going to help DJ this show. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Just great. I loved
Thank
Rise.
You.
I'm falling in love with this one a little harder, I think.
That's probably Kersh's fault, then.
And why don't we just start right off by you picking a song for us, and let's get to music right away, and we'll
see. Sure. Well, one of the songs I've always loved is Teardrop by Massive Attack.
And this is a song late 90s? Would that be right?
Yeah, I think it was 90, I could tell you. It was 99, because it was the year I graduated from high school. I remember I was in, it's this pretty legendary record store in Encinitas where I live called Lose Records.
Right, and you live in California.
I live in California, and it's a small town near San Diego, and it's kind of this huge surfer area, and people come from all over the place to go to this record store. But suddenly it just came on the system there, and I kind of stopped what I was doing. Huh. I had to go up to the guy at the desk and see who it was, because it was just this particular sound and vibe on that record and that song in particular that was just mind-stopping to me.
Well, let's listen. The record's called Mezzanine, yeah? Is that right?
That's
and this,
it, yeah.
The song's called Teardrop. Give a listen to Massive Attack. Gorgeous voice.
Mm.
Is that I think it's Elizabeth Fraser from
Cocteau
Twins. Oh, good. That's really lovely. I like that a lot. So you were at a record store looking for something and found that. What was it about that attracted you?
I mean, I'm really big on vibe, you know, which sometimes can be very subtle and sometimes it's kind of hitting you over the head. But there's the particular mood on that record. It's very gripping and at the same time very spacious. And you know, heavy but accessible. I love the weight on that record,
mm-hmm.
and it just drew me in.
That word spacious is something that I was thinking about when I was listening to your music. It's the space in between what's going on that is ever so important. It often doesn't happen in a lot of American music, doesn't happen in a lot of pop music.
Well, I mean, there's a bit of a trap when there's such a formula that everyone is expected to follow. You know, there isn't really the space to move with that, and if you're being given this limit of having every song that you ever write be 3.5 minutes so that it can be played on the radio, there's only so much time you have to say what you want to say.
And there is that tendency to put it all in there, huh? Heaven forbid, leave it for the next song. The opening track to your new CD is called Burn, as you mentioned, and it really sets the tone for the record. Are you doing the singing?
Is it Burn? It's actually not me singing.
Do you sing?
Not publicly. I'm playing sitar and piano on that track, and we actually worked with a singer from a band we know from Israel called J-Views. Her name is Noah Limbursky.
Well, I'd love to play some of her because it was gorgeous, and it wasn't that far from Elizabeth Fraser's sound there.
Totally.
This is a CD you've produced with Kersh Kalle. tell me when we come back what his role is on this record, how okay. some of it got put together, but let's give a listen to Burn. Could tell me how you put a song like that together, and what do you hear in your head before it happens?
it was kind of like building blocks, really. We had quite a few layers on that song.
I bet you did.
this piece was actually one of the few on the record that was really either Kirsch or myself to start with. This was really Kirsch sitting alone at the beginning and kind of coming up with that particular sound, you know, a lot of the synth sounds, the bass line, you know, a lot of things that really make that song so distinctive.
Yeah.
And then he kind of abandoned it and perhaps didn't see a context for it on the record. And I loved it so much, I didn't want to give up on it.
At the point of abandonment, what was there?
I think it's, again, that vibe thing we were talking about before, where I knew it already had that, and we just had to find an eloquent way to put a story to it, whether it was instrumental or vocal.
Nice.
But we had to say it right, but it was already there, you know? Like, it already knew what it was saying, and it spoke to me. So from there, I Kirsch sort of said very clearly, well, it's your thing then, see what you can do with it. Then he kind of locked me in the studio at one point and just had me play through, and that was kind of a next layer that happened on that piece of music where it became a solo sitar song. And
with all the atmosphere?
With all the atmosphere and the strings and everything already being on there. Then it was kind of a level of coincidence or luck or whatever from there, where a friend of mine, Nishant, had written these lyrics for me just kind of in passing, like, because he's a writer, and said, if you want to use this anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those moments where we were working on this song and I suddenly heard the song melody work on top of it. And next bit of luck being that Kirsch was in Delhi working when the singer happened to be in Delhi. So we kind of roped her in, recorded her immediately.
This is one of those questions that is sort of unanswerable, but I'll ask it anyway, which is that word luck, that word coincidence, there is magic as a musician that I've experienced, that you've obviously experienced. Is luck the right word?
Maybe not. I mean, I think you're making a choice at that point about whether you're choosing to believe whether things are either preordained or meant to be. Sometimes they're not the same thing.
That's another whole conversation.
Exactly. but I think there's a level of recognizing things, which I choose to look at it as. It could be a coincidence, which may happen. And to me, it just means that I'm meant to be where I am, mm-hmm. or that I should keep going in the direction I'm going in. And I mean, this entire project was kind of that too, because Kirsch and I had no necessary professional reasons to work together. You know, it's not like the label put this together or that it went through managers or anything. It was just us happening to have a moment with some friends where we made a small piece of music where kind of looked at each other and realized there was musical chemistry, you know, and kind of decided to put a lot of things aside and just block out some time and go and work. And we had no idea what would happen.
How does it feel sitting back and listening to this?
Kind of overwhelming sometimes. It was a very crazy experience. I mean, I've never collaborated in this way before. It is amazing to look back and see that this record actually happened on so many levels. I mean, whether it was legal or logistic or or anything like that. But then just musically, all the different places we went. And, you know, it was my first time working with a string orchestra composing for them or even writing lyrics in English. I don't really come from that space. And for Kirsch as well, we really were pushing each other into new areas.
All for good, I'd say, having heard it. And for those who haven't, it comes out this week. It's called Breathing Underwater. Pick me another tune, Anushka Shankar, and see where we go.
Well, I was, I think, 5 or 6 years old when this record of my father's came out called Tanamana. And so it was a huge part of my life because it was one of the records my mom used to put on, and I would just kind of play to it. You know, I'd have these play stories in my head. I'd dance around the room, and there were all these characters that went with different pieces of music. And it's a very unique album in the millions and squillions that my father has made over his career, because it was the one time that he decided to kind of dabble in electronics for fun, you know. And he did this probably a decade before the Indian artists started exploding on this electronica scene, just for fun, you know, the way you do. But it's lovely to me because, I mean, you can hear that it's made in the 80s. I mean, when it comes to the sound of the keyboards and all of that, it's definitely dated.
The synth stuff.
Yeah, but the thought behind it, the intent behind it, the way he manages to really retain the what's important, which is the feeling of the melodies, and simply enhance it with where he goes electronically and so on, I think it's very beautiful.
Amazing to hear such short form from your dad.
I know.
It really works. It totally works for me. And you do the same. I mean, there's a number of 3-minute, well, even shorter tunes on your... How do you like working in a form like that? You grew up, I assume, playing fairly
longer
long form
pieces.
Tunes.
Absolutely. There, on the flip side, there can often be a tendency in the very classical Indian world to let the timing run away with itself. You know, people might think you have to play a raga for an hour in order to show that you're able to play it, which, I mean, the beauty is also that you can sometimes express the character of the raga in a nutshell, you know, whether that's 2 minutes or 20 or or whatever. And that's something my father's always kind of impressed on me. So in a classical show, of course, the pieces might be a lot longer, but it's nice to experiment another way as well.
Why don't you pick another tune for us to play? And then I'll go back and pick something from your CD.
I think from all of my sister's albums, my favorite song is probably still from the first album. It's called I've Got to See You Again.
And this is from the Norah Jones Come Away With Me record that is...
That did what it did.
Yeah, it did a lot, didn't it?
It did okay.
Did all right. Not bad for a beginner.
Yes, yeah. Yes, see.
It is remarkable. And when was the first time you heard this song?
This song I actually heard on the record. I heard Come Away With Me and a couple of others that ended up being on the second record when she was working on them a few years beforehand. But I've Got to See You Again was new to me on the record.
You grew up a thousand some odd miles apart, yeah?
Yeah. We met pretty late. We met when I was 16 and she was 18, which is still younger than a lot of people realize.
Yeah.
You know, we were already very close by the time, you know, she became as well known as she now is.
Had you shared either your musical loves or each other's music?
We definitely come from different spaces. I don't just mean stylistically in what we play, but we do have different tastes, you know. So she'll play me, you know, Willie Nelson, for example, because mm-hmm. he's a hero.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of nod my head and get it.
But who would
not
your equivalent
really
be?
Get it. And I'll play her like electronica and Bjork and all this stuff, uh-huh. and she'll do the same. You know?
I love that.
But we've definitely shared all of that, even if we do come from different spaces.
Uh-huh. Let's give a listen to the Norah Jones song, I've Got to
See You Again.
I've Got to See You Again. Thank you. What do you hear in her sensibilities that you feel inside of yourself?
That I feel inside of myself?
Well, inside of your own music. And is there anything, I know when a brother and sister get together and sing, mm-hmm. or two sisters or two brothers, however it is, there's a resonance often in the voice. I'm wondering if you hear something in her, in inflection, in the way notes bend, or anything that feels very familiar to you.
I don't know if it's necessarily in delivery per se, but there's a very intrinsic sense of integrity in everything that she does, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, makes
you can hear that she's really singing from a real space. And as a listener, you sort of believe that anything she does is coming from the heart, you know, that it's music she believes in. I can just hear
Absolutely.
That in the way she sings. And that's definitely something very important to me. I think every decision I've ever made musically is coming from the space that it's something I really love or feel like I have to do or can't help doing. maybe that's a commonality.
Yeah. When was the first time you got to make music together?
Other than just in a silly way for fun, then it would be this record, Breathing Underwater. I think once we'd already put one or two songs in English, we'd already planned to record Staying on the record, and it just seemed like there was a context for us to finally have a musical dialogue, you know. And Kirsch was sweet. He kind of left us alone for a few hours and let my sister and I come up with something together. And there was an idea that I'd had for a couple of years, not even knowing it was an idea, just a set of words that I'd kept singing and would get stuck in my head. And at first I was kind of shy to share it with her, but obviously once I sang it and then she sang it, it sounded amazing. So so we went with it. And that's when Kirsch came too. And between the three of us, we came up with the song Easy that we actually just went and recorded the next day.
Great. Let's give a listen to it. It's on the new CD, Breathing Underwater. Anushka Shankar is our guest. And this is her and Norah Jones. Thank you.
it's only love. It's only love. You know how it feels. Feeling is easy, I
So what instrument did you set out to write that song on? I mean, the piano?
Again, it was one of those weird, maybe coincidence things, where the line that I'm playing on sitar was part of another, what was originally just planned as an instrumental idea that Kirsch and I had just kind of left on the side for a minute. And when I was sitting with my sister and sharing those lyrics with her, we realized that we could kind of split up the sitar parts and put the verses in between, and that the chords were the same. And so there it worked.
That's great. Love it. Go ahead and pick me another. There was one quite upbeat tune on this list that was different from all the others.
Well, I've got this new discovery in my life, which is that a few months ago I just heard Rodrigo y Gabriela for the first time.
Fun couple.
They're incredible, and we've made friends since, and kind of fallen in love mutually with each other's music, which is lovely. Hearing them live is definitely the most magical. But it really is an incredible record. They translate their energy and their passion and their playing so well.
Now tell me if I'm wrong, but these are two folks who are Mexican and found an open community of people in Ireland, is that right?
Exactly. They ended up very, I guess, impulsively deciding to leave their metal band in Mexico and ended up traveling to Europe,
right,
where they somehow
forgot about the metal band part of it.
Yeah. This is the thing. I mean, people might pigeonhole them as flamenco, which is really not accurate. There might be some inspiration there, but it's kind of a lot of Latin sounds with a lot of metal flavor. I mean, that's really where their soul is coming from. It's this very energetic and fiery way of playing. It's very unique. I've never seen two people play together like that.
And comfortably living in Ireland.
Yeah.
P.S. Okay. Let's go ahead and give a listen to Tamacun from Rodrigo y Gabriela. That's a lot of fingers.
That's just sick.
Wow.
Yeah, first time I heard them, I didn't know if I was inspired or like frightened to play an instrument again. Seriously.
Well, there's not a lot of space in that music. That is full of stuff. That is good.
Yeah.
It's good playing. Yeah. Can you imagine hearing your sound in their sound? Could you imagine playing with them?
Yeah, I could. I mean, again, it would be finding a commonality or a language, but yeah, I think so.
There's something that happens, and maybe I'm making too much of this. Stop me if I am. There's something that happens in a song called Slither on your CD. It's got this real stuttery sitar thing, and I couldn't quite figure if it was real or if it was
Kirschkalle. This was actually our third co-producer, Gaurav Rana, who's one half of the group called the Medieval Pundits. And he was, in a way, the link between Kirsch and I, because he's worked extensively with both of us, and he's close to both of us. So that was really, in a way, why Kirsch and I could work so safely and freely together, was because Gaurav was part of it. But on that song, on Slither, I actually played a line on the sitar. And then Gaurav kind of kicked both of us out of the studio for 2 hours and sat with that line that I'd played and chopped it up into like tiny, tiny split-second particles and restructured an entire line out of what I'd played. It was really incredible techno genius there.
Mm-hmm. It takes a little bit to get to. I don't remember where it is. I'm just going to start from the top. Maybe give a listen to Slither. It's on the CD Breathing Underwater, Anushka Shankar. This is really good stuff.
Thank you.
Really wonderful. How does your dad like it?
He actually likes it, surprisingly. I shouldn't say surprisingly, but it's definitely a bit nerve-wracking sharing stuff like this with him, as you can imagine. But he actually liked that little line. He thought it was hilarious. And he sees the context as well, that like after that we're playing something that is from the classical space. And when we do that, we're doing it with sort of respect. So.
Do you have to constantly keep working on the classical music, or is it something that comes natural? Classical players usually are just known for just constantly rehearsing and playing and getting better and better.
I think as far as if you want to retain a certain level of openness within a vaster level of the music, it at least involves being mentally a part of it at all times, which sometimes I run the risk months into being involved in other projects that it almost feels a little foreign. And I don't mean that as far as playing goes. That stays intrinsic. But there's so much in this classical music. There's so many ragas to sort of keep at hand, you know, that involves remaining in the space a little bit.
Do you want to take us out on one piece of
music?
Sure.
I mean, do you care which one? Sure. Well, Björk was always one of my favorite artists, and Isabel was kind of key for me when I was 17, 18. Maybe around the same time as really Massive Attack, Portishead, a lot of those type of things were a big part of my listening life.
For you, you had such depth in another world of music and the way that music unfolded was so different. Hearing someone like Björk when you're 17, having that under your belt.
Like you said, what I play is so deep, and the music that I've learned is so serious and so, you know, spiritual, but also very mental and very calculated and mathematical in the rhythmic aspect, that it's a lot to take on. And it's still my favorite music in the world. But all of this, you know, listening to whether it was psychedelic trance or more eclectic electronica, it was just an opposite for me. It provided me with kind of an out, you know. And somehow at the same time, there's still a core that I find common. I mean, it doesn't need to be overtly spiritual music in order to hit the spirit.
And it's totally inspiring you now. You can hear it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Marvelous. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Anoushka Shankar talking to us from WNYC in New York City. Thank you, WNYC. I'm Bob Boylan from NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.